Welcome to the Power Play Podcast, where international cricketer Kyron Powell and marketing genius Jordan Shannon join forces, bringing you captivating conversations with the biggest players in cricket and business. Join us as we dive into the lives of current stars in the cricketing world, the legends before them, and those extraordinary icons whose performances changed the game in both cricket and business. Exploring journeys both on and off the pitch, the boardroom, and everything in between. Get ready for an exhilarating blend of cricket, life, and business insights with two insatiably passionate, infuriatingly no-holds-barred hosts, who, unfortunately for the rest of us, live and breathe this stuff for a living.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 27 of the Power Play Podcast. I'm Jordan Shannon, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Kyron Powell. How are you, Kai?
I'm good, Jordan. How are you?
Yeah, very well. Thank you very much. Off the back of a three-day bank holiday weekend, which was quite nice, and the sun's picking up here. So summer's around the corner, it feels. But I've been in the same country for a week, and how many of you done this last 6-7 days?
I've done 4 and back in 7 days. So I'm extremely tired. I don't know what time it is biologically, but I'm just pushing.
Oh my God. So where have you been?
We've been to Greece, we've been to Dubai, out to Sri Lanka. I was literally supposed to spend 12 hours in Sri Lanka. And so Emma was like, oh, let's see how that works out for you, because like, my mother-in-law wasn't going to have that. Right. So I ended up spending 2 nights out there, and then to Abu Dhabi, and then back.
Well, to be fair, you're saying it, obviously it's chaos and stuff, but extremely jealous. But, you know, I want to start the podcast in terms of, obviously, the last two or three weeks we've been going over the, you know, selections in terms of the World Cup and things. And there's a couple of things I want to go over tonight, is some of the selection, you know, some of the selection dilemmas as such, but also a little bit more in terms about the tournament. But your first thoughts on the West Indies squad that was named?
For the most part, pretty much expected it. Shamar Joseph was a complete left field thing. I wasn't expecting that.
More so than Jason Holder.
I wasn't expecting Jason Holder either. Like, obviously, we selected our team. I didn't have Jason Holder anywhere near my 15. And I don't think that it necessarily makes sense, because, like, I've heard, I guess, not reports coming from the West Indies camp per se, but like just throughout the region, people are saying, you know, his role is, I guess, his bowling. Right. I mean, you've got Alzari Joseph, who's going to play. They seem to be invested in Shamar Joseph as well. And then obviously you've got the likes of Andre Russell and Romario Shepherd, who sort of dual threats that will play because of their power hitting and finishing towards the end of an innings as well. So right. I don't think it's a situation where at any given point the West Indies are going to play four fast bowlers, much less five. So I didn't think that the squad was necessarily balanced, in my opinion. I thought that they could have gone in with, obviously, Alzari, Russell, Shepherd, and I would have had probably someone like an O'Shane Thomas, who they've had in the build-up throughout the tournament, series before. I would have kept him, and I would have gone with either a Hayden Walsh I would have definitely gone with a Hayden Walsh, and I'll tell you why. My other option that I was thinking about was sort of Kevin Sinclair.
Right, okay.
And again, that would have been sort of a left field pick, because, I mean, he started playing T20 cricket for the West Indies, but they've sort of shifted him, I guess, more towards red ball cricket of late. So he's more in the test match setup and stuff. But I think, like, another all-rounder off spinner, because you got the two left-arm spinners. So I guess for the fact that you probably wouldn't want two off spinners as well, I've gone with Hayden Walsh. And his form in the recently concluded Super 50, where he was joint leading wicket taker with Sunil Narain, I think sort of merits selection when you think of things that merit selection. But clearly, the way we look at things and the way we we think teams should be selected are completely different to what the selection panel sort of thinks as well. Because, I mean, you look at the way they selected the batting slots as well, and you basically have Kyle Mayers completely discarded from the 15-man squad. But you've got, I think, Brandon King and Johnson Charles. So you're hoping that they're in good form and they sort of fire throughout the tournament, because I
Yeah.
don't think there's many other alternatives unless you sort of put Shea
Shay at the
to
top.
open. But I mean, if he doesn't want to open in 50-over cricket where he has more time, I don't think he's necessarily suited to even doing that in T20 cricket where you want to maximize the power play. So,
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of strange options or strange routes taken by the selection panel, in my opinion, but nothing I'm not used to.
No, and you did, to be totally honest, you did call that, in conversations with me, like it won't be a plain sailing selection. There'll be some spanners thrown in there. What did you make? There was two things that I picked up on. I want to take your opinion on the Shamran Hetmyer pick in terms of that. It's his first. He didn't feature in the Australia tour at all. What did you think of that?
Personally speaking, and this doesn't even have anything to do with my relationship with him, because like me and him have a really close relationship, but I think Shimran Hetmyer's cricket sort of it never went off the boil, but you know, they sort of made him a scapegoat under the past like coaching setup,
Right.
and that was to push an agenda and to try and push through players that they wanted. So they had to clear the way for the player
Right.
that they wanted to come in to
Right.
play,
Okay.
in
Right.
my opinion. But I think that Shimran Hetmyer should not only be in this team, I think he should be in every format of cricket for the West Indies. But obviously the way that they've treated him over the years, it's kind of difficult for one to want to play in a setup where literally every other day you sort of get dropped or discarded. But then when you go to play for your various franchises, they understand your value, they appreciate you, and they use you, that you are a match winner, that you were for the West Indies in times gone at a much younger age when you were much more inexperienced, and know that you should be blossoming into the player that they've invested into, that has shown so much potential at a young age. They're discarding you and just have you in and out of the team. So it's frustrating for me to see, and I know it's definitely frustrating for him to go through. It's a tough watch, but I mean, it's West Indies cricket, and agendas get pushed, unfortunately, and certain players get made scapegoats of, so that other things can happen in favor of people that are more favorable to management at the time.
Very well put, I would say that. I think that, I think from, speaking on behalf of someone who's a friend and stuff, I think you put that in a really, precise way and to the point. The other thing I wanted to pick up on there as well is the situation with Jason Holder. He was, I'll be honest with you, he when I was going through my teams, not that I didn't have him in my 11, but I thought about him, and I thought, would he go from an experience perspective? Would he be good around to be good to have around? But ultimately, when he's currently playing for Worcestershire over here, I don't think the communication could have been. I can't imagine he thought he'd be getting on a plane going back home and to the USA playing in the tournament if his prep is over here playing red ball cricket.
Me, based on, obviously I didn't have him in my team,
Yeah.
but based on the decisions he's been making of late, I don't think he even thought that he was anywhere near to sort of any West Indies team, because he sort of said that he pulled out of the Australian tour, the Test tour, to focus on preparation for the T20 World Cup. But then comes back and plays red ball cricket for Barbados, and then comes over to England to play for Worcester, and says he's preparing for the Test match series in England, when you should definitely be trying to finalize your preparation for the T20 World Cup that starts in a matter of days or weeks. So, I mean, his decision making sort of suggests that there's been no communication. And it also suggests to me that he didn't see himself in this T20 World Cup team, nor did he see himself as like a sure pick, even in the squad for the England Test match series. So he tried to come over
And get forced his way in, really.
sort of force your way in through performances, obviously for playing for Barbados, and then coming into the conditions that the West Indies are going to be touring and saying, look, I've been there recently and performed. I'm someone that, obviously has X amount of experience, and I've been there recently. So I should be a viable candidate to be in the squad. Whether he gets into the 11 or not is a completely different situation, because at the moment you've got Alzari Joseph, Shamar Joseph, Kemar Roach, and Jaden Seals coming back from injury. So the pecking order is going to be an interesting one to see who sorts of gets in. But I didn't see it, and it doesn't really make much sense when you look at, as I said, the selections of an Andrew Russell and a Romario Shepherd, because then you're sort of playing three all-rounders, and Jason's batting in T20, it's not explosive to the point where he's going to rip you apart batting at number nine. And you're not going to sort of be sending him up the order when the top and middle order is already packed anyway. So it doesn't really make much sense. But again, Desmond Haynes.
Say no more. No, but that's exactly what I picked up on when obviously I saw the announcement that Jason was going to be playing for Worcestershire. I just thought, you know what, fair play. He's obviously trying to force his way into this test squad, and I actually admired that move in a way of like, taking, doing what you can to force it through. He played in the he went back to Barbados, played in the 4 day stuff, and then obviously coming back over here. So you think about his planning. I think, you know what, fair play. He's under the circumstances and the, like you said, the quick bowlers that you mentioned there, he's probably going to find himself at the back of the queue. But I'm all for any professional player and athlete for, doing what they need to do. I'm all for it. Me and you had a chat a month or so ago. We were talking about Jermaine Blackwood coming over here playing, league cricket, and he said, he wants to come over to find his, to get going again and stuff. And I got massive respect for that. As a professional athlete, you've got, a small, window when it comes to sort of playing. And we've spoke before about capitalizing on opportunities from a franchise cricket perspective and earning that income. But there's also that perspective of doing what you need to do and to actually professionally develop more so. And even at the later, towards the end of certain careers, like they're working hard. And I got massive respect for that.
Yeah, 100%. But it also needs to, I guess, make sense and align with what is happening and what series and stuff are coming up. So that's why I said, like, it really didn't make or doesn't make much sense, because this time that he's playing for Worcester, I mean, a 4 day game is obviously quite a big chunk of time per day and of your week. So how do you then get an opportunity to go and work on your T20 skills
Well,
whilst playing 4 day matches?
they won't be doing, will they?
Exactly. It's not necessarily the wisest move. Doesn't really make much sense, but he's managed to find favor in the eyes of the beholders.
Well, we'll end up doing a full episode on something like that round if we don't change the subject. So, in terms of obviously the T20 World Cup still, what did you make of the exclusion of Jake Frazier-McGurk and Steve Smith?
Steve Smith, I sort of expected, obviously. I mean, I was going to have him in my team regardless, because I'm a huge Steve Smith fan. Jake Frazier-McGurk, I thought, was obviously a lot more of an interesting omission. I mean, I can understand that, the top three have been doing really well for them over the past 18, 24 months. And so you have to back them, because these are guys that have gone on and won major trophies. Sort of they won the not the last T20 World Cup, the one before that, and then obviously the last 50 over World Cup as well. These are tried, tested, and true guys. I think if anything, he would have pushed the likes of maybe a David Warner through age, but not through performance.
No.
Because obviously David Warner in white ball cricket has not really ever had a dip. He's been pretty much consistent, even into the last series that they played against the West Indies.
Yeah.
He was pretty good and scored some runs. So you can sort of see, obviously, why people are excited about him. He seems to be extremely talented. Again, scored 50 off 20 balls or something like that yesterday or the day before.
Yeah.
So absolutely flying. I mean, the rate that he's able to score at, it puts the bowlers under extreme pressure and gives his team such a cushion, you know, such a big margin for error because he gets them off to such a flyer.
Yeah.
And I think that he'll be someone that will be, you know, really good for Australia in the years to come. Unfortunately, he missed out, but we know that he will be definitely in and around the team in the not too distant future.
Yeah, I totally agree with everything that you just said there. I think from my little perspective on it was, I think that when he came out and obviously turned around and said, you know, he doesn't think he's ready for that and stuff like that. And I thought, you know what, fair play. And ultimately as well, it's only going to be a matter of time before he does get that call up and things. And, you know, that squad that we went through, both of us, it's packed. And especially at the top of the order and stuff like that, and the way that they have the balance and things. I understand from their perspective. But I also think it'll be a big, you know, sometimes you need, I won't say a knockback, it's not necessarily probably a knockback as such, because it's not like he was probably expecting it. He's probably forced his name in the selection conversations based on his performances in the IPL. But I think that, it allows him to keep that focus and drive. You know, and it'll come good. While we're still on this topic of obviously T20, this is again, it's something that I'm picking up on a little bit. I'm just not seeing the publicity from a PR perspective out there at the minute. And to think that it's, you know, I think it's like a month away now, give or take, maybe a touch less. There just doesn't seem to be much talk about it at all. There's no real, you know, previews or press talking about squad. Like, there's obviously the little bit of releases in terms of when they're making the squads, but, you know, even over here in terms of Sky Sports, it's there's just nothing that's talking about, you know, England defending the crown. It's all about negativity towards, are we playing too much cricket, and all to do with, you know, balance and stuff. It just doesn't seem like it's happening. It's really bizarre.
And that is all because of an overdose of cricket. But people will point to everything else, but sort of the IPL. No one will ever say that the IPL is too long. It's taken too big of a window because of the amount of money players and countries generate from the IPL's existence. And so, I mean, having probably the biggest, which is strange, but having the biggest tournament, which is the IPL, end before what is supposed to be the biggest tournament, in the T20 World Cup, like sort of 8 days before, sort of highlights, you know, what really is taking precedence over what should be taking precedence. And so that's why I guess there's such a lack of excitement or even just press coverage around the T20 World Cup. And it's sad because, like, these are tournaments, you know, it's a World Cup, players should be, and countries, everyone should be buzzing about, you know, the World Cup coming up. Obviously, there's the Paris Olympics this summer.
Yeah,
that's been a buzz around the world for quite some time.
Yeah.
But because now the ICC have sort of put in a major world event every year until 2031, there's sort of no excitement because it's just a matter of, if I don't win this one, there's one next year and the year after and the year after. So you don't have that 4 year wait. You have literally 10, 12 cracks at it, whereas over the course of a player's career in the past, you may have had two, maybe three cracks, depending on the longevity of your career. So those are things we have to look at as well.
Yeah, I think like you just hit the nail on the head there in terms of the overdose is causing the lack of enthusiasm towards this. But at the end of the day, it's still a World Cup.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the end of... You know, I don't want to sound negative towards franchise cricket, but you're, in my opinion, again, you might say I'm completely wrong with this, would you rather win a World Cup for your country, or would you come away winning, take out the financial benefits out of it, would you rather be remembered for winning World Cups and trophies for your country, or winning franchise tournaments? And I think that I'd like to say maybe people would like to prefer to win the tournaments for the country.
But you see, I think the issue is you actually can't take away the financial benefits
No.
from it, because that's sort of the reason why there's even a talking point as to
Yeah.
players being at the IPL as opposed to preparing for a World Cup with their countries, because ultimately it is unfortunately a situation now where players are looking at the longevity of their career, maximizing their earning potentials, and
Yeah.
most players now seem to be willing to be a lot happier being financially stable as opposed to winning World Cups, because you see players retiring early or not even wanting to play for their country and choosing to go the franchise route. So, I mean, that
Yeah.
clearly speaks volumes in terms of, I guess, what's a priority for lots of players.
Yeah, yeah, you again, you spot on with that. And maybe that's my perspective looking at it rather than from a professional player's perspective, is obviously the angle that you come on, and I totally respect that. I just wish that there would be a bit more out there, because we've spoke on this podcast before about the grounds that they talk, in especially in the one in New York and stuff, like there's nothing, like nobody really knows where we're at with that. I know I read an article maybe last week or the week before about them putting this drop in pitching and stuff, but I'm no clearer if that's been successful or how's the actual infrastructure around the ground going. We know we spoke about, from a logistical perspective, how they're going to get the fans in and out. And, with it being India versus Pakistan there as well, it's not going to be a case of it being, going under the radar. This is arguably one of the biggest games of the tournament. So I'm really not sure, what the current state of this, the situation is over there.
Yeah, I mean, out of like, obviously, personally, for a lot more preparation matches to be played sort of on these facilities, so teams could have sort of a benchmark and understand what would be a good total, what would be sort of a par score, below par, and have somewhat of an understanding of conditions. You can't necessarily have a World Cup, so this is a major world event where teams are going into a facility and not knowing anything about the
No.
facility, what it looks like, because it's all a temporary facility. The pitch is being prepared in Florida, from what I understand, and driven up to New York. That's what the ICC had sort of said in one of their releases and stuff. I think it's a
Yeah.
guy from Australia that they've brought
Yeah,
over
they, yeah.
to do the drop-in pitches. So these, as you said, like, these are major things, because when you look at the magnitude of an India-Pakistan match
Yeah.
being held in New York, I mean, Americans are going to really get an understanding of, okay, you guys think that, maybe a 20,000 seater
Yeah.
arena is bigger, let's say 100,000 seater for an NFL game or college football game, or maybe whatever viewership the Super Bowl has. You're going to understand the power of an India-Pakistan cricket match and the eyes it gets around the world, regardless of if there's promotion or not. This is something that will be viewed by at least a billion people around the world in terms of across all streaming platforms and wherever it's available. So, to have, I guess, this level of lack of awareness around
Yeah.
conditions and stuff, to me, is personally unacceptable. And it's going to boil down to teams going into games in New York for the most part and choosing to bowl first because they don't know what conditions are
Oh,
like,
yeah.
and backing themselves to chase whatever the opposition makes, having had a look at conditions and trying to be able to plan a way to come up and muster whatever score they make.
No, I again, I totally see, I agree with you that I'm a little bit disappointed with it from the ICC, really, in the fact that, this is arguably, one of the most populous cities in the world, New York, and the sport that we love has got an opportunity to really highlight, The popularity of it, the entertainment aspect to it. Like you said, with India and Pakistan, the crowd's going to be there. You've got a billion people watching the sport as an ICC tournament. I'd be pushing it. I'd be marketing the hell out of it, and making it look like, even if it's from a perception perspective, I'd be making it look like this is the equivalent of this is the cricket Super Bowl. This is exactly, this is what we're about. This is what we do as a sport, and really, really pushing it to that to every corner of yeah. I really would, and I think that it is frustrating. We don't know, like you said there, team's going to win the toss and likely going to bowl because it's just we don't know what we're chasing. You don't know how it's going to play. It's lack of common sense and it's lack of preparation. And you don't get that opportunity every to go and play in New York and stuff like that. They should as a sport, and the IC should be doing everything they can to make sure that that is like a, how good would that be if it was a 270 versus a 260, and a real high entertaining game of cricket with everything. It'd be perfect. Perfect. But
I
again,
mean, you're talking about the media capital of the world as well. The Big Apple. I mean, I would have personally loved to see a few preparation games, obviously between the US and Canada, sort of like a stateside rivalry in the lead up to the World Cup, something that they can build some buzz around, come and support us as we take on Canada in New York, our new stadium. We're going to have one of the biggest games in the cricketing world. We're going to have some of the biggest stars in the likes of Virat Kohli, Rohit Sharma, etc., Babar Azam, Shaheen Shah Afridi, really come out and, just really push it in America, especially the media capital of the world, and really draw some attention. Get all the news stations to be so interested that they have media crews camped out outside the ground on a daily basis to get progressional updates on what's happening. It's such a buzz. Oh my God, look who was here today. Match referees from the ICC, etc., etc. People coming in, checking up on the progress, So that would have been, as you said, the ideal route, really market the hell out of it. But unfortunately, we have no information on it.
No, exactly. And there's things out there in terms of, these are things I've thought about before, like using influencers in a manner of which to drive hype and stuff. And I just think that there's so much opportunity out there that it could have been massive. And it still might be, but they've got a shorter window to go and do that. And, from a cricket fan perspective, I hope that, they do maneuver something so it is as high, it has the most opportunity to be successful. But, we'll see how that unfolds over the next few weeks, because it is only weeks now at the end of the day. I want to finish this episode by, I read a really interesting article. I found it interesting, but slightly bizarre at the same time. And I know I sent it yourself. And it was regards John Lewis, the England women's head coach, using AI as part of his analysis and team selection. And I just wanted to sort of get your opinion, really, and what you made of that. And, is it just a bit of, I don't know, really. I wanted to get your thoughts.
Well, funnily enough, that happened because I've got a colleague of mine out in India that started a AI tech startup quite a few years back now, and he's just sold it to a major American company, let's say 2, 3 years ago. And so I think the powers of AI is something extremely interesting. I think it's very beneficial once used in the right way. I don't know, I guess, the full extent or how he uses it in terms of his selection process. But I think cricket is more so because, I mean, someone can have amazing stats, for example, but you can look at the game or you can look at a player and tell, so cricket is a lot down to instinct and the eye test and a gut feel, as opposed to someone can cut it, as opposed to just putting in raw data into a computer or machine and getting back results and saying, okay, this person has superior stats, because those stats might be in very favorable conditions, you know, against lesser opposition, for example.
Yep. I think when I read the article, the first thing that came to my head was, okay, yeah, I understand how it can be used and the benefits of that. But, you know, they talked about it in terms of battles, how people would match up in certain scenarios and stuff like that. But I think from my perspective, you're eliminating analysis straight away. You know, you've got people within your team who that is their role of looking at that. But again, the analyst will understand that a player might be carrying a niggle, so that's why they underperformed and the stats have dropped. Or, you know, what, you know, there's various bits of other things. It's not just a case of, you know, I struggle against left arm spin. So you look at the stats and they struggle against left arm spin. So, you know, that's the battle that we need to fix. Or what we're going to go with that, they struggle with a short ball. So the plan's going to be, you know, deep square, firing light, et cetera, et cetera. Because you take that, for me, is the role of the analysis. So you're taking that that job out of it completely. But I think it could help you, it could aid you and give you that, maybe, you know, a little bit of a start to look into it. But I just think in terms of, you know, team selections and stuff, I just don't think it can be used in depth enough. You know, you talk about people's, you know, sport in general, like what happens if you've had, you know, you've got some personal stuff going on, you've got outside distractions, that's why there might be a dip in form. There's just too much things that can come into it that allow AI to basically determine something so accurate, in my opinion, anyway, personally.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting one. Obviously, from what little knowledge I have, they seem to be, I guess, the first people to implement AI into team selection. So it's going to be interesting to see how, I guess, the England women's team progress based on the AI selections or not. And I guess if it goes well, it'll be something adopted quickly by the rest of the world. And if it doesn't, it'll be something that is sort of binned.
Truthfully, I think, look, in my opinion, if you had limited resources, I would be, you know, you could potentially put some bits of data in to try and help you if you were struggling for resources. But ultimately, whether it works or not, I'm not sure. I think they tried it in rugby union, if I remember rightly, or something like that. It might be rugby league, I'm not sure. But, you know, there's always going to be things that come into it and bits of stuff that they try and use and things. So whether it's successful or not will be to be continued, that conversation, I imagine.
100%. I'm definitely going to look forward to, I guess, the results of that, because it will be something that, I mean, AI is definitely changing the way of the world.
100%, so. massively. But it's whether it's adaptable for this, you know, for cricket. That's something that's untested so far, really. And, you know, even if you use it in the series, you can't just use one piece of data to show it. You know, you're going to collate loads of data to be able to judge whether it's successful or not.
Well, I'll tell you what, AI is something that, I guess, evolves and grows so quickly that even if it's not cricket specific yet, it will be able to, I guess, be cricket specific very quickly, especially with, I guess, the likes of India and some of these other Asian countries being such big tech hubs and obviously having a love for cricket as well. I'm pretty sure someone is at this very point in time when they're sitting down here talking about it, working on something cricket specific. And who knows, maybe we actually need it. Then we'll have better selection policies. We could get rid of selectors.
Say no more. Someone's going to be listening to the listening or watching this and turning around and say, well, you'll see, it's around the corner.
Please get it going.
Well, thank you very much indeed for joining me. I hope that you know, you're not doing too much traveling over the next few weeks and you can finally get used to one time zone anyway.
Well, I thought that now that the cricket season is over, I've got a bit of a break, but it seems Things are a lot busier now. I've got a lot of stuff happening, obviously personally. So yeah.
Yeah, no, it's some exciting news as well. So it's all good.
Perfect.
Thanks very much, man. Speak to you soon.
Cheers, Jordan. Speak
Thank you
soon.
for joining us on the Power Play podcast, hosted by Kyron Powell and Jordan Shannon. We hope you enjoyed this immersive dive into the world of cricket and business, exploring the unique experiences and perspectives of players past and present, alongside those invaluable insights into intriguing business themes that transcend beyond the boundaries of sporting heroics. Be sure to set your reminders on your Alexa or Google Home device. Or we won't tell anyone if you still use those paper calendar things from a bygone era. Join us next time for more inspiring dialogue with scintillating minds on the Power Play podcast.